When I was a little girl, one of my earliest memories, one of my core memories, like Inside Out, one of my earliest memories was hiding under a chapel pew, hiding from my peers. Couldn't have been more than 7 years old. And I've mentioned, if you have listened to my show before, that in my youth, I was a member or a part of a very interesting church that, in hindsight, I would say was kind of cult-like. Part of our belief system was not to eat pork or shellfish because it was deemed unclean. So that's not uncommon. There are a lot of religious systems that believe that. But as a 7 year old, I think if I can't remember the setup, I can't exactly remember how I got to the church underneath the church pew. I mean, I do remember that part of it, but the part before I was hiding, I think that I was sitting at lunch with my peers, with my friends, and we were probably talking about what we were eating for lunch, and I probably said something like, oh, I don't eat that. And someone asked why, and I said it was unclean. And the person kind of took offense to that and was like, that's not true. And I said, yes, it is true. And then they said, no, it's not. That's not true. And then I probably said something like, it's in the Bible. It's true. Because there is verses in the Bible in Deuteronomy that talk about what's clean and unclean. It's part of the old covenant, if you're familiar with any of that stuff. And I don't believe in this stuff anymore. But as a child, I believed very fervently and very honestly in this. So I set out to prove that yes, indeed, this was in the Bible, because they didn't believe me that it was in the Bible. I didn't, even though I went to a Christian school, elementary school, I didn't have a Bible on me. So the only place where there were Bibles that were readily available was the chapel. So we were at recess. I think we were at lunch and then we were at recess. The conversation went from lunch to recess. And then we went into the chapel, which was accessible to us. We went to the chapel. Or I probably went by myself. I remember going by myself to look up these verses. And even though I had been in this church for maybe 1 or 2 years, and this was one of those core beliefs, and I knew the verses, I knew, I could not find them. I looked through the, you know, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, and it's in Deuteronomy. I think it's in two places, but I was looking, could not find the verses for the life of me. And when I was recounting this, my mom, she's like, could have used Google back then. This was way before Google, cell phones, smartphones, any of that stuff. I was in the church, in the Bible, flipping pages. Couldn't find this. Couldn't find it at all. So the girls, I was there by myself and I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed because I was wrong. Or I was right, but I was wrong. So they came into the chapel and I hid. I hid under the pew. And I remember this, and I remember being so scared. And they saw me. They looked, I felt like, you know, I had stolen a horse or something. They were like a lynch mob coming after me. And they looked for me. And then they saw me hiding and they're like, she's hiding. And then they left. And I went home that night and I finally found the verses. Of course, when I didn't need them, I found the verses. But this moment in my life set up this need for me to be right about anything and everything. I have a need to be right. And I have a very good memory, so I'm very good on Jeopardy. So I would remember facts and figures. You know, I I made it a part of my identity, a part of myself, to be right, because I could not stand to be wrong. And, you know, in thinking about this moment, I'm brought to think about this moment because I had something very similar happen to me tonight. Tonight, I'm a part of a disability advocacy cohort. We're basically learning how to advocate to our legislatures, to our senators, our state reps, and in general, we're learning how to present a story, how to support something, and how to gain, you know, our policymakers' support from our stories. So part of the training, part of the education, is that we learn about different important topics in disability. Again, if you're new here, I have three adults that are my children that I care for that are on the autism spectrum. They're autistic. They're 25, they're 22, and they're 18. And I have five children in total, but the three, what leads me to advocacy is my children, my adult children. I hate calling them children because they're so big now. They're so big. But they're the ones that I do this for. And I have been advocating for them for my whole life. I mean, for their whole life. Seeming like my whole life, because I first got pregnant with my son when I was 20 years old. So, you know, I've been a mother for a very long time. And in my manifestation of self, I have been going through all these individual traumas and things that have happened to me in my life, and I've been revisiting them for improvement, for self-improvement. I've been questioning myself to the core. So I had to question my need to be right. What does that come from? You know, I've gone through the gamut of emotions and feelings. I've gone from, you know, being a judgmental person to not being a judgmental person. It's funny because I am the most accepting, easygoing person you could ever meet or have the pleasure of having conversation with. I love talking to people. I love getting people's perspective. I love hearing about people's lives. I'm very interested in people. So people tend to want to talk to me and tell me their life story, like to complete strangers. I have this experience all the time. Just yesterday, I was in the city with my daughter who's getting her yearly dental surgery. And I just happened to be walking next to a man who just started in full-on Spanish talking to me about his life. And I had to stop him because I don't speak Spanish. But he was like, oh, that's okay. And then he started explaining it in English. I was but I have that. That's one of my gifts. I make people feel comfortable. I make people feel safe. I make people feel like they can tell me anything. And I won't judge them. I think part of this comes from the fact that I've had many experiences in my life where that was not so for me, where I have shown myself to people, where I have been vulnerable and exposed myself, and I was not accepted. I was, in fact, judged, rejected, what have you. It's funny to kind of have these different traumas and different things that you have to heal to move forward, to put them behind you, but also to believe in the law of assumption and the law of attraction and believe that you create your own reality. Because a lot of times, going through these things brings up emotions and things that you haven't dealt with, things that you haven't looked at in a long time. This particular event, I just remembered, and it became, I felt it again tonight when this particular thing happened to me again. So to give you the setup, again, we're learning about different aspects of policy. And it is, you know, it's, I have to give this education, this curriculum credit, because it has made me challenge a lot of my own ableism and my own biases and my own thoughts about my children, about myself, about people with disabilities in general. And it's funny because I consider myself an ally. I also, in some ways, consider myself a person with a disability because I do, you know, have an ADD diagnosis. And, you know, so I know what it's like to have impairments, but not to the extent that my children do, and not to the extent to many of the people that I've met as a part of being a part of this group. But tonight, we were watching a movie together that dealt with sheltered workshops and sub-minimum wages. I'm not going to give you an education on that. I'm going to invite you to go research these terms on your own, because if you don't know about it, you should know about it, that there are laws that allow for companies to pay people with disabilities a lesser rate simply because they have a disability, and the government says that they're allowed to do so. And this particular law was put into place, and I learned this tonight, veterans who had come home from the war and they were injured and disabled, but they still needed to work. So they put this in to give companies a certificate that they could then hire these people but pay them a lesser rate. It is completely unfair. Believe me, I stand and say that it is not fair to pay people a lesser rate because they have a disability. Please know that I'm not in support of that aspect. But what happened as a result is that certain companies, certain organizations, agencies created what is known as a sheltered workshop. And what it is a place where that's for people with disabilities to work, and they get paid a sub-minimum wage. Either they get paid by the piece or they get paid a lesser rate because they have disabilities. But a lot of these places are training places. They're places, they're a stepping stone for people who do not have all the skills to be able to work in competitive employment. And that is their argument, that this is not a destination. This is part of the journey, okay? So I actually used to be a job coach once upon a time, and the agency that I worked for, it was an agency created, and one of our missions was to end sheltered employment. So we would come in and we would train and we would help people with disabilities create resumes, do a job search, interview skills. And then if they got employed, then we would also job shadow, go in, help them navigate the work world, all those little things that people who work, you know, all these things, you know, how do you talk to your boss? How do you put in for time off? These little nuances that sometimes slip between, you know, within the cracks for people with disabilities because of, you know, comprehension levels, anxiety, what have you. So I already knew a little bit about this world from the perspective of being against shelter workshops. But see, now I have a 22-year-old and a 25-year-old young adult that I take care of, and school is over. They don't go somewhere every day. After 13, 14 years of getting up every morning and going someplace every day, they now spend a good majority of their day at home, a good majority of their week home. And one of the challenges that I have as a parent is to find them something to do, find them something challenging, fun, interesting, engaging. And there are a number of reasons why this is a challenge. One being is that there are no places, there are very little places to do that. There are day programs, and day programs you know, can have the same type of stigma of being a warehouse for people with disabilities. But it is something to do, and you do get to be around other people. But there's drawbacks. And then there's also these sheltered workshops. So I happen, it's funny how these things happen, but last week I actually went on a tour of one of these sheltered workshops for my daughter. And it really was not a bad place. And I'm not going to lie. This place supports 120 people with varying ages and levels of disability. There's job coaches there. There's facilitators there. And it was a very nice place. I have to be completely honest. It was a very nice place. The people there were happy. They were pleasant. It was clean. It wasn't a horrible place. And it's definitely a place I could see sending my daughter to for a couple days a week. So, enter tonight. We're watching this movie pretty much about the state and national, conversation on sheltered workshops and subminimum wage. And right out of the bat, it is very compelling. It's like, you know, a person with a disability, let's say a company makes widgets and we do a contest and we see what the average amount of widgets should be made per day. So we get an average of quote unquote able-bodied, non-disabled people that make 10 widgets, right? But then we have Bill, who can only make 5 widgets a day. So we're gonna pay our able-bodied, non-disabled person that makes 10 widgets $10 an hour, and we're gonna pay Bill, who can only make 5 widgets, $5 an hour. Completely unfair. I wholeheartedly agree. Because even if Tom, our able-bodied, non-disabled person, only makes 5 widgets, he's still gonna get paid $10 an hour. Whereas Bill, our disabled person, he make 5 on average, but every once in a while may make 10. He's not going to make $10. He's still only going to make 5. So it's unfair. But what did I see last week when I went to visit? I saw people who I would not necessarily see out in the workforce, out in our daily workforce. And that is not right. And I was actually just commenting to somebody else that a lot of people in my community who I knew had some sort of impairment, who I'd seen working, I haven't seen working. I haven't seen them at the grocery stores, at the restaurants, at the stores. I haven't seen that many people. But I don't see a lot of people working either, because a lot of these places are empty and are running on skeleton crews anyway. But I'm even seeing less people who I knew, people that had gone to school with my kids or people that I was familiar with from different groups and stuff that had disabilities. I haven't seen them out working. And I'm wondering what's happened. I'm wondering because across the board, disability services has lost funding across the board and has lost staff, particularly after COVID. A lot of people who had jobs supporting individuals with disabilities went because during the pandemic, those services were not allowed to be in place, you know, because of the lockdown and quarantine. These people had to find other jobs in other industries because they still had to work. And many of these people did not come back. Even after these rules were lifted, many of these people did not come back. So, and I've experienced that firsthand in my own family. But last week when I went on my tour, I didn't see slave shops, sweatshops. I saw people who were getting a chance to be out in a community of their peers and work. So I have a wholly different perspective than what was on the video. And the people that are part of my cohort did not have the same perspective that I did. And in fact, were very vocal, and I would say a little insensitive to my perspective, which I did make, I just let everybody know that I was on the fence with how I feel about sheltered work environments and subminimum wage. So today, I was hiding under the pews. I had to leave class today because I was about to burst into tears because I'm a strong person, but I can only take so much as an individual. You know, I am actively, daily advocating for my children on all fronts, trying to get them more services, advocating for their health care, their well-being, advocating for all sorts of things, not to mention as a parent, just taking care of the groceries, the mortgage, you know, all these different things that go into part of being a parent, you know. And my kids are older, you know, they're at the age where they should be in college, or where they could have been in college, or they could have been out working, but they're not. And they need some place respectable and to go, right? And if there's no day programs, appropriate day programs available, and, you know, there's no activities during the day, then this is an option. And if it's safe and it's clean, and if the people there are respected and treated with respect and are being taught skills, then what's wrong with it? And I think that in some ways you have to go on a case-by-case basis. And like I said, I'm a Black woman. Of course, I don't want people to be paid less than they're worth, you know? But I don't think these jobs are about worth. See, I think the argument is not equivalent to say my daughter going someplace 2 days a week earning half of minimum wage, that's not her life. Like, that's a part of her life. It gives her someplace to go, something to do. She doesn't even understand the concept of a paycheck, okay? I mean, she really doesn't. Like, all her needs are provided for her. She doesn't understand the concept of a paycheck. I mean, we're learning things like how to cook food, how to make healthy choices, like where you want cookies, but maybe you should eat an apple. Like, we're at that level, you know? And what's wrong with that? You see what I'm saying? Like, I feel like there's value judgments being made about people's ability levels. And the people were talking about, you know, low expectations. I don't have low expectations for my children. That's not what this is about. I have high expectations. I've had high expectations since the day that they were born, you know? But somebody even said that somebody that would put their child there is a bad parent. And I was just like, I gotta go. I can't sit through this. Because I fight with people. I advocate. I work for my kids every day. My class was from 7 to 9 tonight. I just had a meeting with my daughter's behavior specialist from 5 to from 5:30 to 7, or 5:30 to pretty much, yeah, 5:30 to 7. Just, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is what I do. So there's no low expectations here, but there are things that need to get done, and there are things that need to happen, and I'm preparing this world and my children to be without me at some point. So she needs to learn work skills. I'm going to send her someplace where she can learn work skills. And then I'm going to hopefully help her find a job that she likes, that she enjoys. But mindset and motivation wise, she could care less. She just wants to go hang out someplace for a couple days a week and, you know, get away from mama. But I was under the pews again. I was searching and looking for verses to explain why I'm right. And what I didn't realize as a child, which I realize now as an adult, is that it doesn't matter if I'm right. And it doesn't matter if they're right. None of that really matters. What matters is how do I find balance between these things? Like, this is more about healing the trauma and being having things being brought to your forefront that you have left unhealed. And that's what this event that happened today, that's what that was more about. And what was funny to me was that while I was in the moment and I was on the verge of tears, you know, I had to take a step back. You see, because as that child who was hiding under the pews from her so-called friends, you know, if I was to now revisit and revise this moment, I would walk into that chapel and I'd look under that pew and I'd reach my hand out and I'd say, Nikki, you have nothing to prove. If you think that not eating pork and not eating shrimp and shellfish is what you want to do, that's okay. And if they don't believe you, that's okay too. But I was at recess at school. There was nobody there to do that. But I can go back and do that now. That's called revision. I can go back and do that now. And today, I had the opportunity to kind of go back and do that. And yes, I reached the point where I was upset and I was about to cry. But I was able to stop. I was able to regroup. And I was saying, what can I learn from this? And that's the most important thing. Because I don't want to go into a shame spiral where I'm beating myself up. And I honestly, in the span of about 10 minutes, I kind of did go through all the issues where I was upset and I was on the verge of tears. And then I'm shame spiraling and I'm a bad person. I'm on the wrong side of history. And I'm like, I don't have anything to prove to these people. I have absolutely nothing to prove to anyone. And that's a good feeling at the end of the day. The realization that your life and your decisions are your own and that you create your own reality and that, you know, I don't have to beat myself up about choices that I make and I don't have to prove that I'm right. I don't have to be right. I can be absolutely wrong in what I'm doing and what I'm thinking, and that is okay. There is nobody that's going to judge me, harsher than I can judge myself, that is. But there's nobody that's going to judge me. And this is what I didn't understand as a child and most of my life, is that I don't have to be right. I don't have to make sense. What I believe doesn't have to be anything else that anybody else believes. So, this has been a really refreshing realization, and maybe you learned something, maybe you didn't. Hey, oh, by the way, this is Live, Love, Lux, Manifesting the Life Unlimited. I'm Nicole, your lovely host. Thanks for listening. I hope you did learn something. Welcome to your life. Talk to you soon.